You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And
story is everything.
We're
your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And you've
just been listening to Hot Texas.
By the Hot Texas Swing Band, our good friend Alex Dormont and his band down there in Drippin Springs, Texas. And we are delighted that you are joining us, whether you might be watching live right now or you catch this later on Podbean or on Rendezvous with the Writer Facebook page or LA Talk Radio Facebook page or LA Talk Radio YouTube. We are delighted to have you with us tonight. First thing we want to say is a thank you.
Last week, Tom Swearinger.
Yeah.
Interview with Randy.
With Randy Palmer last week. Yeah. We were out of town and Tom took the reins as he always so wonderfully does. And if you're a songwriter or thinking of being one or wondering if you are one and you should pursue it, Randy gave us a lot of great songwriting tips. And that was episode 189, if you go looking for it. And tonight is number 190.
190.
And Jim,
190.
Who is with us tonight?
J.J. Harrington.
Hey, there he is. Hello, J.J.
Hello, folks.
Welcome to the show. We're delighted to have you with us.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And let's go ahead and take a moment and say hello to all our Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison friends that are probably tuning in right now. Hello, everybody. We're so happy that you're with us tonight. JJ, where are you joining us from?
I'm joining you from Stillwater, Minnesota. It's on a historic scenic river dividing Minnesota from Wisconsin. And we look right down on the river.
Oh, and has spring sprung there? Or is summer already happening where you are?
Spring is pretty good right now, but we're going to have 100-degree heat wave next week.
Welcome to our world.
Well, then I guess the ice is all melted, right?
Yeah, no ice fishing going on right now, right?
No ice fishing now.
Well, let's see. So we know where JJ is tonight. And Jim, where are we broadcasting from tonight?
Well, I tell you, it's 1977, and we're at the Boston Gardens for a big ice skating event. There's this young woman figure skater by the name of Angie Parnell. She's going to try to land a triple axel. It's never been done by a woman. I understand she's been on a special diet. She lifts weights. She practiced ballet, all to get ready for this event. I got a feeling that Angie will approach everything in her life with this much gusto. She is a force to be reckoned with.
Yes, that Angie Parnell. She is one of the main characters in the book we'll be talking about tonight. Yeah. Goodbye, not Goodbye Cuba. That's the first book in the series.
Goodbye Demons.
Goodbye Demons. Oh, yes. My goodness. You can see all our post-it notes there, JJ, because we read the book, don't we?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You got a lot of questions for me.
And Angie Parnell. Oh, my goodness. This is a character that will make your pulse race many different times throughout this book as we followed her. But before we get into more about the book, JJ, let's kind of get to know you a little bit. Would you just share a little bit more about your background that maybe Jim didn't cover? Jim didn't do the bio yet.
Oh, that's not good. Ahead.
All right. Hold on.
JJ Harrington, As a child of the industrial Midwest, he received a bachelor's degree from Loyola University. Thanks to the GI Bill he earned from his days as a soldier, he received graduate degrees from the University of Chicago and Georgetown University. He was in the diplomatic corps and taught political science at the college level before he decided to concentrate on writing. Today, J.J. scribbles his tales of intrigue on the banks of the St. Croix River in Minnesota, where he lives happily with his wife, Sandy. That's the formal bio.
Thank you, Jim. I was running ahead. My pulse is already racing, you know.
I don't know what I can add to that, Jim.
I'm sure. Mike, for instance, tell us a little bit more about your military service.
My military service was quite prosaic. I was simply an ordinary soldier, and for 2 years, I was stationed in Germany as part of the U.S. forces in Germany, and I didn't have any great leadership positions, policy positions, but it's an unbelievably important element of a person's life. You make bonds with people in very close quarters for a very short period of time that is the rest of your life. You have experiences that last you, and if you go in at a very young age like I did, you learn an enormous amount about life, yourself, how to deal with other people. And because we were in the middle of the Cold War and we understood that our presence there was simply to deter the Soviet Union from taking over West Germany and Western Europe, we knew a little bit about the global situation we were in. Not a whole lot, but for a 20-year-old, quite a bit.
And when did you get into the diplomatic service?
Well, when I left the Army, I had a GI Bill, which enabled me to go to college. And then after I graduated from college, I took the exam for the Foreign Service and passed it. And they hired me, and I was assigned for a tour of duty in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, which at the time was the capital of Brazil. And I worked in the public affairs section of the embassy, which was the greatest job in the world for a young man. I learned to speak the language very well. I was one of the best speakers in the embassy. I met a lot of people, fell in love with the culture. And as I said, it's just, for starting one's career, that's the greatest job one could have. It was really a great, great job. However, I did. So your next question is going to be, well, it was so great, why did you leave it? And I think the answer was because I was becoming more aware and astute politically. Brazil at the time, I love Brazil, but Brazil at the time was run by a military dictatorship that our government supported 100%. And there were some things going on that were really bothersome. And so after a tour of duty, I decided to become an academic, get a PhD in political science. And I was lucky enough to get a job teaching it afterwards. But I can't tell you how much I enjoyed that experience in Brazil and how shaping that was.
That's just so interesting because, you know, we hear all the time advice to writers, you know, write about what you know. And you have written a series. There's actually 4 books, but I have 3 just to hold up fast to the camera. Goodbye, Cuba, followed by Goodbye, Bobby. And then the most recent, which we'll be talking in greater length, which I'll hold up again, Goodbye, Demons. And obviously your experience is woven beautifully into these stories. When did you first maybe start writing, JJ?
Oh, I can tell you the exact moment. I was a college teacher. It was late in my career, and I had a couple of textbooks. The publishers wanted me to revise them. And the idea of spending my next 2 summers in the basement of the library poring over political science articles so I could find one gem of wisdom to make the 8th edition stand out better than the 7th edition. It didn't excite me anymore. And so I was kind of looking. And later in my career, this one year, I gave an assignment to my class. I want you to read a political novel. So everybody had to read a political novel. And so the time came to turn them in. And I'll never forget, this young one woman came up to me to hand in her paper. And I remember what her name is. I remember what she looked like. And I remember what she said. She said, "Professor," she had read a book about that was set in 1947 Boston. And she said, "Professor, I wish I could have lived in those times." And that stunned me. That stunned me. And I came to understand for the first time in my life, you can touch people in the heart, in the soul, with fiction in a way that I couldn't with all my social science writing. And so I decided at that point, I'm going to learn how to write fiction. Mm-hmm. It took a while to get to it because I still had a family to feed. That was what moved me. That's what got me started.
That was the moment. What a great story. Yeah. This is why we love the opportunity to talk to our talk to our authors. I think readers love
some great stories,
to have that kind of backstory. Yeah. So let's see. Just since we're talking about how you got writing, it's so fun to know. Do you do longhand? Do you work on a laptop? Do you dictate? How do you get your, how do you write?
Well, the doing of it, I usually draft on my laptop in the morning. Sometimes I'll just go to a coffee shop and write it out on a notebook and then type it over my laptop. Yeah. And then I print it out, and then in the evening, I'll sit down with a glass of wine, and I'll edit it. And then when I go to bed, it's unfinished. Because it's unfinished, I got something to start with the next morning. I type up what I edited, add something new, and that's the way that I normally work.
That sounds like a really fun day.
Yeah, it does.
I think maybe we should try our hand at writing. That sounds like a lot more fun.
Somebody pay us?
Oh, it's a very lonely craft because you're spending an enormous amount of time by yourself. So you get to appreciate times like this when you can interact with other people.
Sure, of course. So you've written four books that are in the series. We just have the last three of them. Did you always know when you had the first idea, book one, did you know, JJ, this is going to be a series? Or
no.
Okay, so talk about that.
No,
a little
bit. I didn't. The Goodbye Cuba. I was fishing for an idea of what I could write a story about. And the way that I write stories, I try to take ordinary people, put them in crisis situations that are beyond their control, and they've got to build their life and react to them. And so I'm asking myself, and most of the vast majority of our literature is so negative that I was looking for something that showed Americans doing something that worked. We've had so many failures in our foreign policy. We had Vietnam. We had the overthrow of the prime minister in Iran in the 50s, which led to the hostage crisis that I read about in Goodbye Demons. And I remember sitting out in the sun at the Shea Slums thinking, well, what was, if you go from the Berlin Airlift in 1948 to the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1989, what was the one single biggest foreign policy success that we had? And I said, it's got to be the Cuban Missile Crisis. We were on the verge. We were just lucky we did not have a nuclear war with the Soviets. Yeah. But they negotiated it out. they came to an agreement, they solved it, and they settled it. And so I created this character, Charlie Parnell. He was a lieutenant in the Army. He got co-opted by some rogues in the CIA to run a black ops mission in Cuba. And the story just picks up from there. But when the very day that he lands in Cuba, the U.S. discovers that the Soviet Union has been putting nuclear arms and nuclear missiles in Cuba. And so the story takes off from there.
Yeah. Then it was so captivating and engaging that you just had to go on to Goodbye Bobby.
Well, it takes me a long time to do these. I'm not very fast.
That's okay. But, you don't have to be fast.
So again, I'm back on my chaise lounge sitting on the sun. Now, what am I going to do next? I put Charlie Parnell in Cuba. He's fluent in Spanish. What can I do with him next? What's the next big thing going on? And we had this mammoth war in the 1970s, the Vietnam War. And the most interesting thing, this is titled Goodbye Bobby, because Robert F. Kennedy was running for presidency in 1968. And of the two big issues in his campaign, one was he wanted to end the war in Vietnam. He just said that over and over and over again. So the story starts the day that he makes his announcement to run for the presidency, and the story ends the day of his funeral. And in between those 3 months, you got the same character, Charlie Parnell. He's now got this 9-year-old stepdaughter, this Cuban-American. He's got caught up in a scheme. I don't want to give away the details of it, but a scheme that sends him all kinds of places, puts him in danger, puts his stepdaughter in risk of becoming an orphan if he gets stuck overseas and can't get back. So you're dealing with this guy, you're dealing with his daughter, and you're dealing with Bobby Kennedy and his attempt to bring some end to the war in Vietnam. Would that he had, but he couldn't.
Yeah. We are going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking in greater detail about the most recent and just won an award, Goodbye Demons. But before we do, here's a question. Are you a writer? Here is a word from our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. And when we come back, we'll be talking more with JJ. So don't go away. There's lots coming. Talk to you in a moment. You're invited to join the team. Up your author brand when you team up with Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, specializing in author branding, digital book tours, book reviews, and social media. Experienced, trusted, effective. Get noticed. Visit BlueCottageAgency.com and ClicksByMadison.com, proud sponsors of Rendezvous with a Writer.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest, J.J. Harrington. And we're talking about several of these books. Particularly, we're going to be talking about Goodbye Demons. And, there is a song in the first part of the book, regarding that involving Angie, which we mentioned earlier. The Beatles song, Let It Be. How did that come about that you kind of pointed that and put that in the book?
Why did I put that song in the book?
Yeah.
One of the things I do in all my books is I try to incorporate the music from the period. So any of these books that you look at, you're going to have a lot of the pop songs play a role here. But Let It Be was particularly apt. This is the great song of Paul McCartney. And Angie, as you said earlier, Bobby, is a skater. She wants to win these regionals because she wants to get a slot on the Olympic team. If she can do this triple axel, she's a shoo-in to make the team. And, of course, all these figure skaters, from watching, they have music playing in the background. usually it's classical music. She chose to have this piece, Let It Be. And so that's what's playing while she's skating. And she's skating in rhythm to the music. And right as the music reaches a crescendo, she's got to start her leap to do the triple axel. And I don't want to spoil it and give away what happens.
That's enough.
Yeah. You got to read it.
We can't say anymore.
Got to read it.
But what's important about that, though, is that her coach doesn't want her to try to do that. She says, you're not ready. You're not ready. Wait till next year. Do it next year when you'll be stronger and better. And Angie replies, I can't wait till next year.
Yeah.
What if somebody else does it in the meantime? Yeah. And I'm only the second person to do it. Can you tell me who is the second woman who flew across the Atlantic Ocean? Oh, we all know the first one, Amelia Earhart, but none of us know who the second one is.
The second one.
This tells you volumes about the personality of this young woman.
Yeah. And you know, I have to tell you, I listened to that song often when I'm reading a book and there's a reference, I go looking for the music. And I knew the song. I'm a girl from that time period. We all, you know, just the opening, the beginning of the piano, and you already know it. But you know, JJ, I felt as I was listening to it again, and then later again and again, we all need that song right now, playing in our soundtracks. It seems so, it's a timeless song. It's a classic song. It speaks across the years and across the generations. But I felt like, oh, we need this song now with the state of the world, don't we? We need that song now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Goodbye Demons, kind of what was the inspiration for the story?
In 1979, when a group of militant university students attacked the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and took over 60 people hostage, when I heard about that, it was like a punch in the gut. Because, and if you'd ever worked in an embassy or you'd ever lived overseas, you could understand why. Because I respected those people, most of them. And to have this happen was just an affront to the ability of countries to conduct negotiations back and forth. And so I was really outraged. But there wasn't anything I could do about it. I was teaching at the time. I had a job. Had to make an income for my family. And I was no ways near writing a novel. But eventually then I got around to it and I thought, you know, I got to go back to this idea. These people, these 50 some people who are hostages here, they've got to be remembered. And so that was the genesis of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell the storyline or do you want to tell me?
Yes. Please tell us a little bit more about the storyline. This is Goodbye Demons.
Okay, so the storyline is, again, this young woman, Angie, who she suffers a career-ending injury for her figure skating career, and she joins the Peace Corps, where she meets her soulmate, James Whitcomb, who's a diplomat. And they have a rapport almost from the beginning, and they become very close, and they start becoming lovers. And eventually, when their tours of duty are over, they get married. Within weeks of the marriage, James, who's now stationed in the embassy in Tehran, he's taken captive when the embassy is overrun. So what are you going to do? On one hand, you got the guy who's taken captive. You don't know how he's being treated. He doesn't know when he's going to be released, if he's going to be released. Then you have his loved one at home. It's pulling her hair out, biting her fingernails. What can we do about this? And that's the story.
Yeah. And it's gripping and it's engaging. And it raises a lot of questions, readers, as you dive into this. And if you're of the age, as many of us are, that remember this, all of a sudden you find yourself, I kept thinking, wait a minute, is that the year we boycott the Olympics? And is that, you know, I began to really, it's very immersive. I began to really get into the story. And that's when I say, my pulse was racing, whether we were with James and we were experiencing a daily life as a hostage, if you can call it daily life, or we were with Angie while she's trying, you know, this girl doesn't give up. So she's strategizing, like, what can I do? What can I do? I can't just sit and, you know, twiddle my thumbs. I have to do something, right? She's a woman of action. And you, the writer, you build conflict in like every page between the main characters and minor characters and the people that are in charge of the hostages and what they're doing and how the hostages are, you know, responding to daily life. You, I mean, I couldn't, there were days I couldn't, at times I was like, I gotta sit down and go like bring a little soda back or something because I can't go away. And my heart rate back to normal.
Oh, you're making my day telling me about this.
That's Bobby's
student,
like that.
Student was right. You can touch people.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and we know you did some research, and you pulled from your background. I know you probably did some additional research, but I think, did you tell us the other night when we were talking, did you also interview some of the hostages?
I only talked to one of them.
One, that's all right.
Yeah, and had email correspondence with three of them. I relied mostly on published works. A lot of them did memoirs. Some of them wrote books. A journalist wrote books. There's been some very good books written about it. But nothing addresses it the way that this does. It tries to get to what was it like for these people to be there. And some horrible things happen. And everything that happens to James when he's in captivity happened to one or another of those hostages. None of that stuff is made up. Mm-hmm. It's just that they didn't all happen to one person. So I'm being a little dishonest and saying that all this stuff dumped on James, but he's sort of a stand-in for what was going on there.
Yeah. Here's a fun thing that Jim and I both enjoyed. I don't know if it's a fun thing, but something as readers that we both enjoyed. And that is that you start every chapter with, I'll call it a quote. It's really a reader teaser. And I'm just opening the book, chapter 15. Here's the teaser. It's February 1979. And the opening teaser is, "There must be some way." And it tells us October 1979, "No other place I'd rather be." And it's so, you know, you as a reader, you're like, okay, so what's going to happen in this chapter? Chapter 25, January 1980, "You deserve the chance to try." Every one of the chapters, JJ, that you do that to, that you enlighten us a little bit. And I love that. Just like wondering, why is it called, as a reader, why is it called Goodbye Demons? As I'm reading, I'm always thinking, is this why? Is it, oh, could it be this why? Could it be this?
What did you decide?
I had some different ideas. And then you helped crystallize it at the end. I felt like, okay, I had that idea. Again, we're not going to tell you, reader, because you need to pick up the book and you need to have a one-on-one experience with it. But I was satisfied with the title and how it fit with the story. And I was satisfied with the ending.
Oh, I think, you know,
it surprised me a bit, but it also it's also,
I think it's a good ending.
I think it absolutely made sense that it ended. Yeah.
It wasn't a good, it was a good ending. You know, I just want to mention that, you know, we're talking about 1979. You know, we've got some people out there listening and watching tonight that weren't even born then. So, you know, and I don't know that how much I got covered in any school courses that a lot of folks took. What was the mood of the country then?
What was the what, Jim?
The mood of the country then.
Oh.
How did Americans feel about this? And
This really captivated. This really captivated the country. There's a newscaster, Ted Koppel, who started a show one night on one of the networks on the hostages. And the readership, not the readership, the viewership was so big, the network gave it a title. What did they call it? The Ted Koppel show. I can't think of the name of it now. Nightline. Called it Nightline.
Nightline.
So every night for the next several months, Nightline brought you up to date on what was happening with the hostage crisis. And they had so many viewers for that, they made Nightline a permanent feature of that network for 10 or 15 years. So clearly there was a lot of interest in it. One of the most interesting things was, I don't know if you can remember this, but there was a song about that time that also shows up in the book. Let's go. Tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. Remember that
song? Oh, yeah.
Yes,
we do.
Yes.
And so the chief diplomat at the time, who was also taken hostage, he was holed out in the Iranian Foreign Embassy house. His wife, his name was Bruce Langren. His wife, Penny Langren, they had a house in one of the western suburbs. And she went out and got some reporters to watch her. She tied a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree because the theme of that song was, have that ribbon tied around her tree until I come back home. And so she did that. And millions of trees around the country all of a sudden had
yellow ribbons.
That's such a great memory.
So, yes, especially at the beginning, there was an insatiable demand for news and information about what was going on. Now, as it dragged on and dragged on and dragged on, by the time you got to the autumn of 1979, I think 1980, the public was getting to kind of tire of it a little bit. But the answer to your question is, it was enormous interest in it.
Yeah. Well, and you have some scenes where the hostages are speaking together. And they're wondering, you know, what is the country? Do you think the country, you know, because they don't know. They get glimpses of newspapers and things. But there's a wonderful scene with a Doonesbury cartoon?
Oh, yeah.
Was that
That's almost, that little.
Yeah.
That was the only way they got any information.
Yeah.
Was from a comic strip.
From a comic strip. You write that scene. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that was.
Say more about it.
That was based on an actual incident. And I mean, I embellished it and fabricated it a little bit, but you got these two hostages they didn't get a lot of time to mingle with each other because the captors pretty much tried to keep them apart. So two of them are together and they're talking. And one of them says, we're totally shut out on any news around the world. I wonder if anybody even remembers us anymore.
Right.
And this other guy says, we remember. There's this guy in Boston sends us these cartoons and from the newspapers. And he had a Doonesbury cartoon with an episode about the hostages. And that scene was based on a true incident.
Yeah. We, JJ, we're going to step away again for just a moment. I hope you're having as much fun as we are. Are you having fun, JJ?
Oh, you guys are great.
We're going to tell you about one of the places that you can order the books of many of our author guests, including tonight's guest, J.J. Harrigan. You can find them on our books on our Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And if you are watching this live or recorded today and tomorrow through June 26, 2026, which is tomorrow, you actually
free get shipping.
Free shipping at on our affiliate page at bookshop.org. So take a listen to this ad and more with JJ when we come back. Don't go away. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. We're talking with J.J. Harrigan, and we're talking a series of books here. We've been talking about Goodbye Demons, but we have a question that covers all three of them. You know, we didn't mention that there was the fourth book where you really, the first book where you really introduced the characters, and that was Jeep Town Sock Hop.
Yeah.
We just didn't have a copy of it.
Yeah, but...
But the question... How do you keep track of reappearing characters? And how do you handle their aging?
How do I keep track of the characters? That is very difficult because the more characters you got, the more difficult it is to keep track of them. Mm-hmm. And you got to try to make each character a little bit independent so they don't all speak with the same voice and use the same language. And they're all a little bit different. With the minor characters, the walk-on characters, I guess that isn't too important. But with the main characters, that's very important. And so this book has 350 pages. And you've got quite a bit of a danger when you're on page 214 with what Andrew did on page 87.
Yeah.
And so you've got to constantly be going back and forth over that. What I do is, this is going to sound, you're going to say no. An author wouldn't do this. What I do is, I put it all on a spreadsheet. I get all my scenes on a spreadsheet, who the major character is, where it is, when it happens, what happens. And on a spreadsheet, so each scene has a line, and I can move these lines back. So, for example, the chapter that you really liked, the scene where she's ice skating, and then it is playing that music that you liked, that originally was not going to be the opening chapter.
Uh-huh.
It was going to be buried somewhere in the middle. And uh-huh. My editor convinced me, said, no, that's going to be much better if you open with that chapter because you're ending this character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And from what you two folks are telling me, my editor was correct. So so then I had to take that chapter, move it from where it was back to the beginning, then juggle all other things around. And so when I could move these things around on a spreadsheet, I can eyeball it and see where things were.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's still an amazing challenge getting everything straight.
Well, and because you're a series writer, at least these books holding together as a series, and you have Charlie Parnell, and we go over years with him, and Angie, when we first meet her, you know, she's a young girl, and we advance her age and such. And so I wonder, how do you make sure that he's got the same hair that he had, or maybe he doesn't have the same hair? You know, he's been going through life. Charlie's been going through different kinds of careers and different, you know, because to keep your interest as a writer, writing these characters, I would imagine you have to keep being interested in them and they need to continue to be, conflict has to continue to drive their changes in character and such, right? Because they're not the same people, maybe, in Goodbye Demons, as Angie and Charlie, her stepdad, were, for instance, in the first book when they meet. So that has to be quite a skill.
Well, say in the first book, in Goodbye Cuba, Charlie's very young. He's 22 years old. In Goodbye Bobby, he's 30 years old.
Yeah.
By the time Goodbye Demons comes along, he's a mature man. And so you track these changes. There are some personality traits he's got, of course, that go all the way through. Mm-hmm. For one thing, he's got a limp. And that limp shows up in every time he moves. To tell you the truth, I can't remember what the color of his hair is.
You can check it out on the spreadsheet, I bet. Oh, that's really interesting. Do you have a question, sweetie? I know you have.
Well, we got, you know, we think we should ask a couple questions about a couple of the characters. And I think I got to thinking that some of the characters are real. And some maybe even are not quite real, but are based on real people. And I think one I thought was Mike Petrinko. He just gets a couple lines in there, but he was a real person.
Mike Petrinko was a real person. And he was one of the most interesting hostages. He did things that I would never be able to do. He was just adamantly in the face of every one of those student captors. He didn't cooperate with anything. He was constantly in trouble. He spent most of his time in that embassy in solitary confinement because they couldn't stand him. He was so difficult for them. There was they put on a Christmas dinner, which was really a publicity stunt, where they brought in three clerics in the United States, had a big dinner, and Petrinko refused to go to the dinner. So then they said, well, we'll bring a dinner to him. They bring the dinner to him, he throws it in the toilet. I mean, I can't imagine anybody was so adamant as he was. And from everything I could read about him, he was that way from day one until they finally were released in 1980.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And so you wonder, well, how would a guy like that keep his sanity?
Yeah. Well, and I am on
one of the things he did was he was penned up in this little room in this old warehouse that was so musty and mildewy that the hostages referred to it as the Mushroom Inn.
That's right.
And he would spend his time mentally redecorating his house in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And each day he would go through some little detail, and that helped him keep his sanity.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's another hostage that was fascinating. Catherine, is it Koob? K-O-O-B.
I think she pronounces it Kobe.
Kobe. Uh-huh.
She's the polar opposite of Mike Petrinko. She was the director of the Iranian American Cultural Institute. And she, by all rights, shouldn't have been a hostage. But she was. And for the first 2 months, they could do nothing. They couldn't talk. They had to sit in a chair. Their wrists were bound together. And the only time they could move was when they had to get up to go to the bathroom or when food was brought in for them. And so she says, I've always wondered what it would be like to observe a monastic silence. And so I thought, well, this might be an opportunity to have an imposed monastic silence. And so she developed all kinds of devotions and meditations that she would go through each day. And she kept her sanity.
Yeah.
And then after the Christmas was over, and she went and she worked at a divinity school after that. So those two people just fascinated me because I wouldn't be able to do either of those two things.
Absolutely. So JJ, I'm looking at time and we want to be sure that our listeners and watchers can find you and follow you and purchase the book. So where do they go to find you and follow you?
Right there, jjharrigan.com is my website. It'll tell you where to go to buy the book. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble. You can buy it all kinds of places. You can buy it at Bookshop. Bookshop.org is a great place to buy it, because if you buy the book at Bookshop, you can have a portion of the proceeds sent to your local bookstore. It's a great way for us readers to help keep local bookstores in business.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Now apparently I can buy it at your store.
Yep, through our affiliate page, through bookshop.org. We love that. You know, when we started our page at bookshop.org, they were very, very new. And every time you go there, right at the top, you can see how much money they've raised. And I remember watching the number go to $9,000. And it's $45 million now. So we have been affiliated with this organization and watched its growth over the last, since about, it started not really because of COVID, but it kind of launched around the time that COVID made itself known. And so it's been, you know, 6 years or something. And it's just been fascinating to watch where that organization is going. Okay. And what are you working on next?
I am currently working on a novel set in the Berlin airlift of 1948 to 1949. The Russians imposed a blockade that would have kept the French, the British, and the Americans from going by the roads or by the canals into Berlin, and so they supplied Berlin for almost a year. By an airlift. It was an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
Oh, we look forward to that. And Jim, you have a quote.
Well, we have a quote, yes. You know, Secretary of State Cyrus Vance is briefing the relatives of and friends of the hostages. And he was just kind of got finished with his talk. And the secretary, he raised his eyebrow as Angie continued before he could say anything. And she, of course, walked right up to him. She said, "Iranians come from a long tradition of commerce and trading. If you let them know something is vitally important to you, they will react like most merchants have raised their price. If we look like we're begging them to release the hostages, they will up their demands. Once they release the hostages, that will be the time to be conciliatory and address their grievances about the Shah." And of course, Vance frowned and he said, "Did you get those insights from a PhD program in Iranian studies or from extended living in the country?" And Angie says, "No, but I've lived in the Muslim world as my husband. Please, sir, just raise this issue with the President Carter and his other advisors."
Yeah, that Angie, you gotta love her.
I thought that was the essence of negotiating with folks.
Exactly. Well, we want to thank you all for joining us for episode 190 tonight. Catch the replay in just a few moments on video on the Rendezvous with a Writer and LA Talk Radio Facebook pages. You can also find it on YouTube on LA Talk Radio's page there. Later this evening, it'll be posted up on Podbean for audio. And we want to say a thank you to LA Talk Radio's founder and our engineer, Sam Hassan. We couldn't be doing this without the magic of Sam. Thank you to our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. JJ, we love them, don't we?
We love them. And we love you too. Thank you very much for having me.
And a thank you to Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band. And a thank you to you, JJ. And you complete our month of June. You were our final guest for June. And oh my goodness, do we have on the tail of June, we have an amazing July coming up. And I'm just going to go through it really, really quickly. There were five guests in July, and the last one of the month, July 30th, will be John Bradshaw returning with his latest book, Elmer Kelton's The Blessing. John's been with us before, and we look forward to having him come back from Germany. Author Alfred Wallen will be with us, and he is a Western fiction best-selling author, and he will talk about the first three books of his Kennedy U.S. Marshall series. On the 16th, we have a publisher and an author, two guests joining us. Bruce Sibley, who is a publisher and also an author with his book, The Last Stage, about the final days of Wyatt Earp. And we can't wait to meet Sam F. Park. And Bruce published this book, Wasted. This is a new voice in Western writing, and we are excited. Can you tell we're excited? And then on July 9th, Were You Like Me, A Kid Who Raced Home for Dark Shadows? Dark Shadows is celebrating its 60th anniversary, and we will have a house full of guests, including Catherine Lee Scott, John Logan, and our a big fan of the show, Henry C. Park. And next week, I know we're running over time, but next week, the first week of the month of July, Cindy Mitchum is going to be with us with this amazing, phenomenal memoir called The Ornery Mitchum Boys, The Adventures of Robert and John Mitchum. And with her, again, film expert and historian Henry C. Park, whose birthday is tomorrow. Happy birthday, Henry. And C. Courtney Joyner, film historian, and his birthday is today. Those three will be with us kicking off July. Thank you for Sam letting us have an extra minute. JJ, thank you for being with us tonight. You have
thank
a final
you.
Comment?
You guys.
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing.
We'll keep reading.
See you next week. Good night.
Bye.
Thank you, JJ.